Welcome to Leo Roundtable at leoroundtable.com. My name is Chip DeBlock, and I'm your host, and we're a group of law enforcement professionals to talk about today's news and issues, but we do it from a law enforcement perspective. And let me introduce Jeff. Well, you guys know Jeff. Jeff is a former LAPD commander, retired as a lieutenant, and he now is in Ohio, but don't let that fool you. He's been busy. He's the author of the book On Thin Ice, and you get more information at onthinicebook.com. And everything going good with the book, Jeff? I know you're still doing tours and doing talking engagements and all that stuff.
Yeah, it's surprisingly doing very, very well. It most recently was number 4 on Amazon bestsellers for law enforcement books.
All right, sweet. Oh, good.
Very encouraging.
Congratulations. And guys, a shout out to our sponsors. We have Gauls, our title sponsor at Gauls.com. We have ComplianceTechnologies.com, our satellite sponsor. Thanks to them, we're on satellite radio. We also have GunLearn.com, MyMedicare.live, and SafeguardRecruiting.com, our streaming sponsor. And thanks to them, we are streaming to over 1 million followers right now on social media during the live show. And if you have an agency and you need recruits, you need people to sign up, SafeguardRecruiting.com. They're the guys that are going to get you the good quality candidate you're looking for. And TwoBells.com, they built a new online store at LeoRoundtable.com. If you want some cool gear without paying the extra prices, go to LeoRoundtable.com, our website, and from there you see online store, and that's the one that TwoBells built for us. And you get cool gear like the shirt I'm wearing or the shirt Jeff's wearing or the coffee mug. Now I'm holding up the old version of the mug. The new ones are bigger and better. They're taller, and they've got logos, this blacked out logo on both sides. So no matter whether you're right-handed or left-handed, you know, you can flash that logo, that classy logo. Are we doing a TwoBells giveaway today, Jeff?
You bet. Absolutely.
I hate to put you on the hook, because if you said no, it's like, oh, you know, I wouldn't want you to say no, you know. So, but anyhow, we're doing a TwoBells giveaway today. So here's the way it works, guys. If you guys are interested in winning the TwoBells giveaway, all you have to do is type in two things, the number 2 and the letter B for Bell. That stands for TwoBells. And give us your email address, and we will draw a winner by the end of the show. And that'll be $20 off your next purchase at our online store at leoroundtable.com. They'll cover the first $20 for you. So again, type in the number 2, the letter B for Bell, and give us your email address so I have a way to get that gift card code to you guys. A shout out to Brian Burns for the Tampa Free Press at tampafp.com. Thanks for carrying the content, Brian. Also, Ray Dietrich with ForwardLawman.com, and our very own Travis Shates with LawOfficer.com. Thanks to all those entities for helping make the show happen. And what in the world are we talking about today? We've got one main topic, home in effect. Local law enforcement arrested 42 anti-ICE protesters at the St. Paul, not the church, but the federal building. That's interesting. We've got California lawmakers. This has been going on, but now there's a new strategy. But thanks to Jeff's buddy, the chief over for LAPD, and also the sheriff over in Los Angeles County. California lawmakers, law enforcement mask ban can be enforced through the civil court. There's a reason why they're having to go through the civil court. Body cam shows Knoxville police fatally shooting a suspect while searching for a missing 15-year-old girl, and they find the girl. And then we have another body cam video. It shows a man holding a toddler at gunpoint, and Las Vegas officers open fire on him. And unfortunately, both him and the toddler end up getting killed. We have authorities uncover an illicit bio lab. Where else but Las Vegas, in a home owned by Chinese nationals? And then we've got a suspect dead after he shot at a Baltimore police officer during a struggle. And then we got Christopher Taylor is reinstated as a peace officer, gets his license back. An officer files a lawsuit against the Tallahassee Police Department after being bitten by a canine. And he didn't work for that. He worked for the Florida State University Police. That's an interesting story. We got to make sure we cover that one. We may have to take these out of order, Jeff. So if you're ready, Jeff, let's start off with the first, the main one. You know, most of our main stories are not at rumble.com. This one is, and it's the Liberty Dailies, the channel. And they call it the Homan Effect, which I thought was interesting, but there's some deeper paths to the story that we're going to go down. But with the Homan Effect, it says local law enforcement arrested 42 anti-ICE protesters at a St. Paul federal building.
You are under arrest. Be seated where you are and follow the directions of officers. You are under arrest. Be seated where you are and follow the directions of officers.
Now, Now, Minneapolis, St. Paul, you know, they're right next to each other there. And they talk about, after several warnings to leave, police move in on anti-ICE protesters outside the Whipple Federal Building in Minnesota, leading to a number of arrests. So the funny thing is, it says local law enforcement. It doesn't say that the feds made these arrests. Local law enforcement made the arrest. Now, St. Paul and Minneapolis, you know, they've got each got their own agency. So it's not the Minneapolis Police Department working in St. Paul. So I like what I'm reading about St. Paul, that they got the local cops, you know, taking care of business. And of course, you, we know what happened in the, you know, previously in the church with Don Lemon. And it's kind of interesting watching the news, because when we had the two shootings with the two killings, and Trump called in Tom Homan, and Homan came in and he met with Tim Walz and he met with Mayor Jacob Frey. And I'm sure, I think the chief's name is what, McNeil, or I'm sure he was in the meeting too. But, you know, when they left, Walz and the mayor were saying, you know, we're not cooperating with ICE. But I guess secretly they'd arranged a deal with Tom Homan saying, yeah, we'll let you into the jails. We'll let you grab the people out of there and avoid all this mess and stuff. And I guess some of the anti-ICE people found out about it. They started staking out Tim Walz's home and playing music at night and loud, you know, and I guess no one enforced the law because he couldn't sleep. So I think it's interesting that they finally found out who was telling the truth and who was lying. And because of that, we were able to withdraw, what, about, I think, 600 or 700 federal agents. We still left 2,000 in place in Minneapolis, but we were able to withdraw the agents that were having them provide protection for the other agents that were, you know, grabbing the illegals and stuff. So it's interesting how things, you know, work their way out. And then it's also interesting how St. Paul local police are arresting people that are protesting outside of a federal building, not a state building, not a local, but federal building. That's just icing on the cake. Any commentary, Jeff?
Yeah, well, it's what I think is what should have occurred a long time ago. You have to have cooperation with the local, state, and federal law enforcement entities. And the one thing that I did notice when I watched the video of this was that it was a nice response by the local law enforcement agency. They're very disciplined. They have a skirmish line. They're declaring an unlawful assembly. And basically, you're authorized in doing that anytime you have two or more people that congregate to commit a crime, or two or more people congregate to commit a legal act, but in a boisterous, tumultuous, or violent manner. And, you know, they're doing everything by the book, and they're doing it by the numbers. And those people that stay or are in violation of failing to disperse when given the lawful order to do so, they are methodically and systematically taking them into custody, where they go, put hands on. We call it in LAPD, it'd be like a little arrest circle. You see the skirmish line then walk beyond them to protect them from the remaining people that are still there. And it's just being done in the most effective and measured way. And unfortunately, this is not how it started. It should have began this way.
Well, of course, we're talking about, you know, St. Paul. I wonder if the protesters got mixed up and confused and they thought that they were still in Minneapolis instead of being in St. Paul, neighboring St. Paul, where the cops are apparently acting a little differently. I still haven't seen this going on in Minneapolis, but
right now I don't know if Minneapolis and St. Paul are in the same county. I believe they would be, but I could be wrong there. I'm not sure. But I did notice that these local law enforcement officers had a sheriff's markings on their uniforms. So perhaps the sheriff may override, because they're the top law enforcement entity in any county, and would make the decision to provide these same type of law enforcement practices and measured responses in these during these demonstrations, while not only in St. Paul, but as well in Minneapolis. We'll see if that comes to be.
Yeah, interesting you say that. You bring up a good point, because after the meeting with the mayor and the governor, Holman very carefully said that he had established relationships with sheriffs, with the counties, and getting access to the jails, which of course is a county thing, right? Not normally, in some rare instances maybe, but normally not a city thing. So yeah, you may be on to something. You know, I'll bet he's met with the sheriff. He's already got a agreement for him to be able to go into the jails and grab these guys and the sheriff probably is liking this newfound, you know, relationship with the feds, and he's going out there and doing that. That's very possible.
Yeah, you know, it's not unheard of. In Los Angeles, we saw it when they had an increased problem in Venice Beach area, which falls within the LAPD jurisdiction, of homelessness. And at the time, it was Villanueva was the LA County Sheriff. He said, enough. And he went in with sheriff's resources to clean things up. So it's not the first time we've seen something like this, where you may have a different political posture of a law enforcement agency, and the one that would supersede the other actually makes a decision to take some action.
I love it. All right. Well, we got about a minute and a half, and let's see our next story coming up. We've got an update story. This is from globalordinancenews.com. California lawmakers, the law enforcement mask ban. We're not going to have time to cover. We're not going to have time to cover everything before the commercial break, but most certainly afterwards. California lawmakers, the law enforcement mask ban can be enforced through civil courts. I am so proud of the LAPD police chief and Los Angeles County Sheriff's sheriff. Made me happy. So we're in Sacramento on this one. It says, while police chiefs say that they will not enforce the state's new ban on masks for law enforcement officers, including federal immigration agents, which is specifically, you know, aimed at them anyhow, California lawmakers say that there is another way to penalize officers who conceal their identities. And of course, they're going there because they can't get law enforcement to enforce it. So they're going another route. Senate Bill 627, known as the No Secret Police Act, can be enforced through the court system, is where they're going, creating a civil penalty for officers who violate the law. And that's according to the bill's author. So it kind of goes on to talk about just sue the violators is what they're talking about doing, but they want to do it in civil court. The penalty, from what I remember reading, and we'll get to it in a minute, I thought it was like around $10,000. So stay tuned for this, guys. This is going to be an interesting story. We'll be right back.
My family only cares about one thing: that I come home safe.
At Galls, every order begins with a promise. Made with purpose. Stitched for support. Backed with pride. Answered by dedicated hands. Delivering the standard you have sworn to uphold. We serve more than the mission. We serve the person. Each piece is engineered to help get our first responders through the shift and back home safe.
Welcome back. Leo Roundtable at leoroundtable.com, the law enforcement talk show. My name is Chip DeBluck, and I'm your host. We're joined by Jeff Wininger, former LAPD commander, retired as a lieutenant from there. And, you know, we left off talking about a pretty wild story, and we're going to jump back into this. This story, it is titled California Lawmakers and Law Enforcement Mask Ban. It can be enforced through civil court, which, of course, is only because they're not going to enforce it the other way that they wanted. It's Senate Bill 627. It's also known as the No Secret Police Act. And here's just in continuing with the article, it says people can file these lawsuits against ICE officers, because I remember I said that it is really targeted towards the feds. And so they're just not even bringing other cops into the vocabulary. They're specifically, you know, mentioning only ICE, and they can file suits against these ICE officers, even if the LA police chief decides that he doesn't want to bother to enforce the law. And that's according to Senator Scott. His name could be Weiner or Weiner. I just like to call him Weiner. So hopefully you don't mind that, Jeff. But Scott Weiner, a Democrat from San Francisco who co-authored the bill. Now, the video and the photographic evidence of the enforcement actions that Californians have been collecting for months will allow them to do just that. So they're encouraging, almost like, you know, I almost consider like the doxing. You know, they want people to videotape and photograph the cops so that they can, you know, fine them $10,000 for wearing a mask in the feds. Los Angeles Police Chief Jim McDonnell and Los Angeles County Sheriff's Department, they both have indicated last week that the agencies that they will not enforce the ban on law enforcement wearing masks. And McDonnell, the chief of LAPD, where Jeff was at, he said that there were risks that could arise with two armed law enforcement agencies becoming involved in a confrontation. And he's so right. He gets it. And here's a quote saying, it's disappointing that LAPD does not want to enforce California law to protect our communities in the face of this assault. And this is what Senator Wiener is saying, referring to the masked federal immigration officers descending on local communities. Yeah. Protecting the way of life from, for law-abiding citizens. Luckily, the No Secret Police Act was crafted to hold ICE accountable without the need for local law enforcement to get involved. I doubt that they anticipated law enforcement not doing it. But individuals, groups, city attorneys, and district attorneys, they can all file lawsuits against any agency, officer, or agents who mask up after January the 1st, according to the law. The civil penalty, it starts at $10,000 starts. The law also requires any law enforcement agencies operating within California that have publicly posted mask policies by July the 1st. It kind of goes on to say the constitutionality of the law signed by Gavin Newsom back in September. It's being challenged in court with the U.S. DOJ arguing that immigration agents should be able to mask for their safety, including avoiding doxing, and that the law violates the supremacy clause of the Constitution, which says that states cannot control operations of the federal government. So that's where we're at. Lieutenant Jeff Winninger.
Well, just like the previous story, there's so much that can be accomplished if you just work together. And the reality is this bill, it just kind of widens the divide. I think in this case, both the feds, as well as local law enforcement, have some validity to their positions. But I'm sure this is something that they can work out. It doesn't require law enforcement to be taking law enforcement action against another law enforcement agency. And I certainly don't think it's productive to encourage people to be going the civil route as well. So, just like we've seen with the stuff in regards to allowing the feds access to the jails in Minnesota, downsizing the number of federal agents that are in the state of Minnesota by a significant number, 600 to 700 have been removed, as well as holding these demonstrators that get out of line accountable by making the arrests, but doing it in a very measured and productive way. We can work through this mask thing, and just everybody needs to sit down at the table and come up with how they're going to proceed forward. And that's really the answer. So it doesn't do anybody justice to sit there and claim a position of righteousness, in my mind, where it's your way or the highway.
Well, I got a question though. The people that have been talking about wearing the mask and stuff, they're saying that they're doing it so that people know your law enforcement. They want to have not just your faces show. They also want to see your names and stuff. And of course, we know why. We know they're doxing agents and they're trying to get the information. But they're saying that they're doing it to protect the citizens, so that they're not in fear of their homes being raided and people grabbing stuff. You really see a legitimate point on both sides of this? Because I only see it on one side. I see the feds being asked to unmask so that their identities can't be protected and that these guys can be in a role to hurt. I see no legitimacy for the other side. I simply can't see it.
Well, I think part of it has to do with identifying people as law enforcement, not necessarily identifying them in regards to who they actually are, as far as their name and that sort of thing, so people could find out where they live and find out who their family members are.
But how does not wearing a mask identify you as a law enforcement officer?
Well, I think this is where the mask, I think it extends into the lack of a uniform. There's no uniformity. If we look at the last shooting, every one of those six officers or agents that were there, they're all dressed very differently. So it doesn't necessarily have to be get rid of the masks or whatever. It may be some uniformity where we don't have two people from the same agency looking completely different. I don't know what the answers are, where people would feel comfortable moving forward, where we're not taking these actions and expecting law enforcement agencies to take law enforcement actions against other law enforcement agencies, or encouraging people to take civil action. I don't think that that's the answer, but.
Well, it sounds like people, you agree. Sounds like you agree that the mask is not a reasonable, it doesn't meet their explanation for why they're doing it. Them saying,
I think the masks in certain circumstances are reasonable. Do I think they're reasonable all the time? Probably not. And that's part of what they get to talk about. they don't necessarily have to be doing them on every action or operation that they're doing. That's for them to negotiate and to discuss. I don't have any skin in the game. I come from an era and a period where we would never have done that. But things are different now. So
well, I say,
it's a different conversation.
I hope they don't. I hope there's no negotiating with the Feds. They're in a great spot right now, and they've got the backing of the American people. And negotiating would not be on the table if it was me. But commercial break, guys. We'll be right back. All right, guys. Compliant Technologies at ComplianTechnologies.com. They're committed to providing non-lethal solutions to help officers gain the upper hand safely and rapidly in a humane, low-optics manner, utilizing what they're called their CD3, which stands for Conductive Distraction and De-escalation Technology. Now, their flagship product, we all know by now, it's called the Glove. It's helped officers, well, I was going to say tens of thousands of times, but now there are over 250,000 deployments with absolutely no injuries or deaths. And they've achieved non-lethal status in an arena that predominantly can only offer less lethal results. And when it comes to retention and transitioning from your side to your sidearm or conductive energy weapon, the Glove at ComplianTechnologies.com, they virtually eliminated weapons confusion. So stay ahead of the game with Compliant Technologies and the revolutionary CD3. The hundreds of agencies have already turned to nationwide, and friends, take it from me, when it comes to safety, this is one of the most common sense, hands-on solutions has ever come along. So go to ComplianTechnologies.com today. Again, ComplianTechnologies.com. Welcome back. Leo Roundtable at LeoRoundtable.com, the law enforcement talk show. My name is Chip the Block, and I'm your host. We're joined by former LAPD Commander Lieutenant Jeff Wininger, also author of the book On Thin Ice at OnThinIceBook.com. Jeff, I know that we were talking about an update story before we went to our last commercial break. Any more information on that? Or
No. I hope they work it out. I just want them to work it out. I think everybody can be pleased with whatever they decide to do.
Talking about the mask law that's being pushed by a senator in California and signing the law by Gavin Newsom, and aimed pretty much at the feds masking up and stuff. And now, of course, the LAPD, where Jeff used to work, the LAPD Police Department and the LA Sheriff's Office, among other agencies, said, hey, we're not going up against the feds and trying to enforce this thing. And so now they have a civil component to this, where they're saying, hey, we'll go against these guys for $10,000 a pop for violating this, and we'll let the citizens take pictures and film these guys. It's almost like they're encouraging that to happen. So yeah, what could go wrong with that? So anyhow, I'm not too worried about this happening, even the civil side of this stuff. I just don't see that happening. But it does show the intent of these who I consider bad actors. So moving along. We've got a story with a video component. We got two stories of video components, guys. These are going to be tough, especially the second one. So let's start this off. And I want to get both these ones in. We got 9 minutes. Rumble.com, our favorite law enforcement video channel called This Is Butter. This first one, body cam shows a Knoxville police a fatal shooting involving a suspect while they're searching for a missing 15-year-old girl. Now both these end completely differently. But in Knoxville, Tennessee, the Knoxville Police Department, they released this body cam footage from an officer or officers when they shot and killed a guy during the search for the endangered child. Now, the agency said the officers that they were following up on credible information that a missing 15-year-old girl was inside an apartment at a North Park apartment complex. And the suspect is a 46-year-old named Angel Melendez. Now, the Tennessee Bureau of Investigation gets involved here, which is impressive. They issued an endangered child alert for the missing girl the day before the shooting. Now, they had warrants also charging Melendez, the suspect, with concealing, harboring, or hiding a runaway child, contributing to the delinquency of a minor, and theft of a firearm. They had all been placed on file, so they had reason to believe this guy was armed. Now, the released body cam footage includes video from the Sergeant Chris Hutton, Lieutenant Sean Shreve, and then the officer Terry Crow. The agency said that the Sergeant Hutton and Lieutenant Shreve, that they are the two officers that shot Melendez. How often does a sergeant and a lieutenant, or they end up being the ones to take that kind of action. So on January 28th, 10:25 in the morning, we have the special operations squad. They knock on the apartment door. They yell for about a minute before entering, and they got body cam. Officer said that they get into the apartment through the consent of the owner. Once inside, they go into the bedroom where the suspect Melendez is supposed to be, and he's standing there shirtless, and the 15-year-old girl is sitting on a mattress that ends up being on the floor. Now, the part with the girl, that becomes more evident when we see it through another body cam. But in the very beginning, you're really looking at the suspect. Now, Officer Crow, he enters the room. As the first officers are yelling, Knoxville Police Department, he orders Melendez to put his hands up. And Officer Crow and Melendez, they end up struggling. And then the gun becomes apparent, and they yell, "He's got a gun." And then Melendez, the bad guy, points the gun in the direction of the officers. And at that point, Sergeant Hutton and Lieutenant Shreve, they fire multiple times, and they kill Melendez. The 15-year-old girl, she's still sitting there on the bed, and she's screaming. And remember, it's a mattress on the floor. But after Melendez is shot, the girl, she continues to scream, and then she's got a knife in her hand, and the Officer Crow is right there, and he tells her, someone yells to get her out, and Officer Crow, on his body cam footage, you can see this 15-year-old girl, she takes that knife and hits him in the head. Now, he ends up not being hurt, but they grab her, take her to the University of Tennessee Medical Center, and then they charge her with assault for, you know, hitting the cop, you know, with the knife. So disaster averted on that one, and bad guy dead. Commentary, Jeff?
I think what's important is that we recognize that there is a level of exigency involved here. Now, I don't know exactly what information the officers had prior to making the entry, but when you have an adult male like this who has a juvenile, and there's the risk of her being harmed, and you could have a crime in progress, it takes away from the luxury of having the time to perhaps use other tactics to try to recover the 15-year-old girl. So they enter, and sure enough, they're back in the bedroom. I mean, well, that's a surprise, right? And then I don't know why, because we don't have the investigation. We don't know the statement of the involved sworn personnel, but why he made the decision to go in and make physical contact with the suspect. I can only assume it had something to do with the fact that he felt that there was an opportunity to separate him from the victim. But then, lo and behold, there's a gun. And, you know, I got to commend how well they communicated, yelling that there was a gun and then responding to that lethal threat. It is interesting what happened with the 15-year-old girl in regards to her response to law enforcement. We don't know the entire background and relationship that she had with this guy. But perhaps, you know, she was suffering trauma, and you know, she was just kind of traumatized and didn't know what she was doing. I don't really know. But that actually is a shock. But you know, you got to commend their response and how they handled this. They came in methodically, but you know, they didn't stop. They just kind of kept flowing like water, but in a very measured and in a practical way. And when they saw the threat, they neutralized it. So it's a good caper.
Yeah, the female, it just goes to, you know, it's rarely perfect, right? I mean, you know, going up and grabbing the guy, you know that he might have a gun, but I didn't see the gun until they grabbed him. So I can see how that could, happen. And the girl with the knife, the last thing I would have thought if I was the cop there was that she was going to stab me, but you know, it's a 15-year-old kid and in their mind, whatever kind of the relationship was that she had with this bad guy, you know, she's going to be damaged from this, hopefully not permanently, but for a while she's going to need some help. But that, yeah, that whole mindset she's in, you just don't know. And so just a little reminder that when you're with these victims or the, you know, you just don't know where their mind is at. Are they upset because you just killed the person that they love and that they think they're going to spend the rest of their life with, or what kind of illusion that they're under? You know, she's 15. What does she really know? So it's I'm so glad the cop did not get seriously injured or hurt. And I'm glad that, I mean, this, it could have gone another route where the lieutenant and the sergeant were having these lethal force against her to keep her from killing, you know, that guy if she started stabbing him. So I'm so glad that it just didn't go there and that it ended the way it did. And hopefully, and I'm sure they'll get her the help that she needs, but yeah. You know,
well, the reality is that they used restraint to not have done so, because
that's a good point.
They would have been justified in doing so. So had they used lethal force against her, it would have been justified in that circumstance. Yeah. And so that demonstrates once again, the restraint and discipline that they had in that circumstance. So, you know, kudos to them. Good for them.
Well, this next story is not going to have quite the same ending. We're still at rumble.com, our favorite law enforcement video channel called This Is Butter. We have body cam video showing a man holding a toddler at gunpoint before Las Vegas metro officers open fire on him.
So right there you can see Baker has the gun pointed at the child's chest. This time I had been struck by gunfire.
And in it, you know, it was like open fire. I heard more than one shot being fired. I was waiting. You know, we had a guy with a rifle from the body cam position. I was expecting one shot. There were multiple shots. And then I saw that there were two shooters and stuff. So let's get into this. Las Vegas Metro, they provided details on the shooting involving their officers that left a man and a toddler dead. The Las Vegas Metro Police, they responded to a report at approximately 1:19 in the morning Tuesday at the Reneka, from Reneka Pate, who accused her child's father, a 28-year-old named Quentin Baker, of assaulting her and her friend at an apartment complex. Now, Pate also reported that Baker, the father, threatened to kill her and her son and attempted to take the child, who was a 3-year-old named Contre Baker, from the apartment. Now, Officer Jonathan Lowe and Officer Damon O'Donnell, they end up getting dispatched to the scene. While they're on their way, they get informed that Baker, the father, had fired a gun at a vehicle twice in the parking lot and left with the child, the toddler, in a car. Now, when they get there, the officers connected with Pate, the complainant. They learned that Baker, the father, was now inside the apartment with the child, and he's armed with a gun. Now, Pate, the female, warns that Baker that he would kill the child if he saw the officers, and that was seen on the body cam. She also stated that he told her, quote, "If you don't tell them to call this stuff off, that they will, if they try to come upstairs, I'm blowing the child's brains out. I'm blowing mine out. You won't have neither of us." And Baker also said that he would not go to jail and that police would have to kill him. So they're going in armed with all this information. Now, I'm going to stop there. This is, there's a lot to cover on this and a lot to unpack. But if there's anything that can be learned from this, I think that we all agree, let's just find a silver lining in this. So we'll cover this when we get back from our next commercial break. Stick with us. We'll be right back. All right, guys, it's time to talk about GunLearn at GunLearn.com. And, as law enforcement officers, we deal with guns and we deal with ammo every day, but it's what we don't know about them that gets us in the trouble. Injuries, civil lawsuits, accidental discharges, misidentifications, lost prosecutions, and also disciplinary issues. But GunLearn.com, they have your back. You can quickly become extremely firearm knowledgeable by simply learning 14 training modules from the convenience of your home or your office, or by attending a live seminar at GunLearn.com. You can also become a safe, accurate, and competent certified firearm specialists like our very own Captain Brett Bartlett and also attorney Ken Afianco. Now, the course has had huge success in raising the bar of firearm knowledge, and GunLearn has been a trusted source since way back in 2011 by gun manufacturers, federal agencies, forensic organizations, and police departments nationwide. Now, if you're a chief or a sheriff and you have your own agency, the founder, Dan O'Kelly's got a deal for you. You can actually host a seminar for absolutely no cost. It's an amazing opportunity. You can go to GunLearn.com to get more information. Again, that's GunLearn.com. Welcome back. Leo Roundtable at LeoRoundtable.com, the law enforcement talk show. My name is Chip DeBluck, and I'm your host. We're joined by former LAPD Commander Lieutenant Jeff Winninger, also author of the new book, On Thin Ice, at OnThinIceBook.com. You know, we left off talking about a story, not a happy ending, but the title of the story, it's body cam video shows a man holding a toddler at gunpoint before Las Vegas officers open fire. And we've got the mom calling the cops. This guy's threatened her and their young child. And she said that Baker told her that if you don't tell them, meaning the cops, to call this and I'm just going to say stuff off instead of what else is said. And if they try to come up the stairs, I'm blowing the child's brains out. I'm going to blow mine out. You won't have either one of us left. He said that he would not go to jail and the police would have to kill him. So as officers assess the situation, and they're not pushing it right there. They're trying to avoid something bad happening. So I can appreciate the officers being in that position. And this is early on too. I don't think they've had time to get a hostage negotiator or anyone else there yet. And then all of a sudden this guy starts coming out of the apartment and he's walking towards them and he's carrying the toddler and he's got a gun. The toddler's in his left arm. He's got the firearm in his right hand, is pointed at the child's chest. And that's how he's approaching law enforcement. So he's all of a sudden he's pushing, you know, for something to happen. Despite verbal commands from the officers, Baker, this father, refused to comply, continues to approach the officers. It appeared in the body camera that he stated something like, look, I'm trying to find the mom. I'm going to kill myself. And officers Lowe and O'Donnell, they both discharged the firearms. And I know that from one body cam, I know that at least the one that that I saw had a long gun. I'm not sure if the other officer that fired had a long gun or not. But they fired. It says that our bad guy Baker holding the child said that at the same time he simultaneously fired his weapon five times, which I find a little surprising, him being able to fire five times. And police said that Officer Lowe fired three times, Officer O'Donnell fired twice, that's a total of five shots, and both Baker, the father, and the child, contrary, that they were both hit by gunfire. The autopsy revealed that the father sustained four gunshot wounds, and remember, cops fired five shots, so he got hit with four. And the child sustained three. And they also said that the father fired five times right at the same time they opened fire on him. Preliminary investigation revealed that the child had at least two close contact gunshot wounds from when the father discharged his firearm. The third bullet was undetermined, and that's under investigation through the coroner and forensic and stuff. They said the detectives were able to determine that the child was struck in the head by a close contact gunshot wound when the suspect, his father, discharged the weapon. And it was also discovered that one of the rounds that the father fired, it ricocheted and struck one of the officers in the foot, and the officer had a bruise and a cut. It didn't sound like that was too severe. Jeff Weininger.
Yeah, I mean, this is just an unbelievably stressful scenario for law enforcement to have to deal with. You have an individual who's a moving target, and he's also holding his three-year-old son, who is going to have to be factored in your decision on when to fire or even if to fire. I guess the one thing that I find a little perplexing, you kind of hit on a little bit, is I'm not sure how it was possible that he got five rounds off. When I say he, the suspect. Unfortunately, the video doesn't continue, so I couldn't really see. But in that situation, anybody that would be firing, this is a situation where you're never firing to kill somebody, but you need to fire to stop. And in this situation, the way you stop is a headshot. So this would be a disciplined, very methodical headshot that would have to be taken. So it is a little precarious that two people fired. I would hope it would be the individual with the long gun who would have the best ability to make that tactical type shot. But I was also kind of a little bit surprised and maybe even concerned that the law enforcement agency is coming out with such definitive statements relative to the wounds until you actually have a report in hand. They haven't completed an official report, and they may just be citing the things that they've been told. But unless you have something codified that you can go back on to support your statements, you're going out on a limb, because I've seen it happen before. You're told one thing and then the report comes out and it does not support what you were told. So you're standing there looking like you didn't know what you were talking about. So I was a little surprised that they came out with such definitive statements prior to the official report being released.
Yeah, could you imagine if they were wrong on part of that? I mean, we already know that there's a likelihood that one of the bullets came from, that hit the child, at least anyhow, came from, friendly fire, from one of the cops. We don't know, but could you imagine if the contact shots they say came from the father, if they didn't, that wouldn't go over too well either, would it?
Right. Yeah. In LA, we had a very similar case back in 2009. I think it was in July of 2009. It was the Susie Pena case. There was a father who was holding his young daughter. he wasn't outside like in this particular incident. He was inside and a SWAT had responded and they made the decision to make entry and got engaged in a gunfight. And it turned out that it was the officer's rounds that struck and killed the daughter, Susie Pena. So,
oh, really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's, you know, these are tragic circumstances, but, you know, you have to give a little bit of deference to law enforcement officers, especially in these cases where they're making decisions in split seconds. And, you know, things don't always go as planned, but they always have the their hearts are in the right place and they're trying to save the people that they're there to save. So although this was tragic, regardless of what the outcome is in the final report, the officers are there with their with the intentions of trying to save the young child.
Agreed. Agreed. Well, I think we have time, hopefully, to cover that one that I wanted to cover. I wanted to go and announce the winner real quick for the contest. So Sharon Mowry, congratulations on winning the two belts giveaway. I have your email address and everything. So thank you so much. And I will get that to you in email right after the show. So thanks for entering. And I want to cover this this next one real quick. We've only got just shy of 3 minutes. We've got Rumble.com. This is Butter, our favorite channel there. Officer files a lawsuit against the Tallahassee Police Department after being bitten by a police canine.
Stop, police! Stop!
Sorry,
you know how the tunnel vision gets.
Yeah, you all right, though?
Yeah, I'll be all right.
Okay.
Dog went after me. Yeah, dude.
He jumped out. I bailed her.
Yeah.
He was locked on him, and he saw him. And
yeah. Where's
the dog back in the car?
Yes, yeah. Back in the car.
Really, he's bit my funny bone, so that's what.
Huh?
Just me. Just me.
Now, this officer, he works for the Florida State University Police Department. So here we go. Lawsuit filed in Leon County Circuit Court alleges that the Tallahassee Police Department K-9 Kai, that's K-A-I, bit a fellow officer from the Florida State University Police Department during a chase. Now, Matthew Foster, who represents the bitten officer, so I'm assuming he's an attorney, said his client has nerve damage on his dominant hand used to draw his gun. During the discovery process, Foster said that he uncovered three total incidents in which a canine bit fellow officers. And I'm telling you, this is not unusual. And he said, think about it. My client's a law enforcement officer. He's chasing dangerous suspects. He gets them in front of him and he's got to be on guard and protect himself from them. And then he's got to worry about being attacked from behind by an attack. And it's not just a canine, it's an attack canine, Jeff, just so you got that. So the city of Tallahassee and the Tallahassee Police Department, they have not commented except to say that they deny that them, the canine or the handler, acted negligently. And it goes on to say that, let me just cut to the chase here. There apparently there's a maximum of only $200,000 that the officer can get. If you watch the video, the officer's telling, you know, the college, you know, cop is telling the other cop, hey, I'm okay, you know, and he acts like it's a big nothing. Then he ends up telling dispatch to get him an ambulance and stuff. And it just didn't make a lot of sense to me when your cops and when they release the dog, you know, there were two agencies there, so maybe there's a little confusion, but you know, you stop because that dog will lock in and it'll bite the handler, it'll bite you. I've got scars all up and down my, but I've never the thought of suing someone because their canine bit me. I've been in fights with bad guys and my arm went out the sidewalk next to a canine and he bit into it, pulled the fat through the hole out of my arm. I had pieces of fat come, you know, like under the skin, the layer of fat. It's just no big deal. And anyhow, your thoughts on this, Jeff, 30 seconds.
Well, it's just hard to say. It's possible that it turns out that he had a lot more severe injury than he thought. And also the thing that needs to be evaluated is were policies and procedures followed by the canine handler. But at the end of the day, it is a bad look whenever you're going to sue another law enforcement agency.
Well, they're not giving the officer's name. We both know why. And I bet the canine handler, they're not giving his name out either, but I'm sure he doesn't, you know, he doesn't mind. But yeah, so they're trying to cover the identities. And this officer didn't work for Tallahassee Police. He worked for, you know, a college police department, which tells me that, and I'm not trying to be mean, but he probably wasn't good enough to get on with the bigger agency. He went with a small college agency. And I'm very disappointed to see that he's going that, you know, I just think that he's just, he probably just doesn't belong in law enforcement is what I'm thinking. Just from what I'm, from the outside looking in, I think that if the injury would have been more severe, he couldn't use his trigger finger anymore. They would have said that. That's not what they said. And plus he, you know, he just said that everything was fine right after it happened. So I don't know. I do want to mention the Wounded Blue at thewoundedblue.org. Jeff Winninger, thanks so much for being on the show. I appreciate it. And let me mention our sponsors too. Gallus.com, ComplianTechnologies.com, Gunler.com, Medicare.live, SafeGuardRecruiting, and TwoBells.com. Hey, thanks guys for the support. We're going to be back tomorrow, 12 noon Eastern. Please watch the show.